This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 13th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. The president has been impeached again. This time, it followed a spun-up mob that invaded the Capitol, killed several people during and after an inflammatory speech by the president. So how will the Senate consider evidence regarding the president's conduct? And if riling up supporters who then go and attack the legislative branch of the federal government won't get you fired and reprimanded for all time, what will? Cato's Gene Healy comments on today's historic vote. Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, it was revealed this week, was in seclusion, pleading with Jared Kushner in the White House to have some support, a rescue operation in the Capitol in the violence of last week. And then a bit later came out and said, I support censure, but not impeachment. And
Well, he didn't want to get reckless. He was in a secure location after fleeing the Capitol. And after pleading with Jared to use his influence, didn't do the trick. Apparently he decided he had to do as many TV hits as he could, because this was the only way to talk directly to President Trump, through the TV screen, and let him know how dire the situation was, and to get him to make a public statement calling off the rabid mob.
You know, this was a vote of 232 to 197. 10 Republicans voted to impeach the president. Boy, it just seems that we're in kind of a bad state if this kind of activity is viewed as not that serious or not worth pursuing this late in a term.
Yeah, 10 Republican votes is not nothing. But it's not too impressive. Like Kevin McCarthy, many of these people were under siege, personally at risk of something happening if the chamber was breached. You could be excused as a human being for probably even be healthy to take that sort of thing personally. And if you're not going to take it personally that the president has riled up a mob to storm the Capitol, you might, as a member of Congress, take a public-spirited view that something like this can't be tolerated, that the president cannot spin up an angry crowd that then goes and sacks the Capitol. You cannot do that with the intention, the express intention of intimidating. I doubt he wanted it to go as far as it did, but his intention was to intimidate members of Congress and his own vice president while they were in the middle of counting electoral votes, in order to intimidate them, in order to get them to reverse the results of an election that he lost. If that's not an impeachable offense, I don't know why perjury in a civil suit is an impeachable offense.
When the Senate will take this up, and it's not exactly clear when, but it seems likely that whatever vote on removal would occur after Donald Trump's term is up. When the Senate considers evidence for whether or not this president committed incitement to riot, would they consider the timeline of the day? That is, the fact that this event was called Stop the Steal. It was a part of lots of other events that occurred with the express approval of the president. These were events that took place all around the country. The president spoke, or at least arranged to speak, precisely before the time at which the Senate was to begin the process of certifying votes from states, and had tweeted out earlier in the morning things that are just not true about the role of the vice president, that the vice president has this power that he did not have, and in fact said he did not have, to not accept votes of states. Is that going to be a part of this? Because it's not a criminal trial. It's kind of a reverse job interview. It seems to me that would all be fair game if you're trying to take a slightly broader than criminal statute view of what constitutes incitement.
Sure. I mean, the criminal law and criminal incitement, but the criminal law and the impeachment process are very different. They serve different purposes, and they have different consequences. The consequences of a conviction in a criminal trial are, is loss of liberty. At the end of the day, an impeachment trial, the penalties are limited to removal from office, which won't be an issue looks almost certain. This is, trial is not going to be spun up before Joe Biden's inauguration. And the other penalty is disqualification. So at the most, the results of an impeachment trial, put somebody out of a job and maybe prevent him from getting another job in the future. It's not a, to use the phrase, it's not a lock him up sort of situation. And for that reason, in part, it's meant to be a very flexible remedy that is directed at all manner of public misconduct by officials in high office. And like Hamilton said, that sort of proceeding can't be tied down by the strict rules that you need in a criminal process. You don't, where if the charge was incitement to riot, and we're talking about a criminal trial, you need to prove all elements of a statutory offense. You would need, since we're talking about a speech act, you would need to meet the Supreme Court's Brandenburg test for the First Amendment and show that the speech in question was intended to cause a lawless action and likely to get that result. That's not necessary in an impeachment proceeding. I mean, I think those who want the president to skate will inevitably try to push it in that direction, but that's a complete misconception of how this works. You do not have the exacting nature and the high bar that we ought to impose in criminal trials, given what's at stake. What's at stake here for the impeachment target is less in terms of punishment, but what's at stake for the country is far greater.
One of the things that in watching the debate unfold today, one of the things that Republicans seem to rely on was this notion that it's not worth pursuing in the final week of a president's term. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like impeachment is something you do for something someone has done.
Yeah, but it also has a forward-looking aspect to it. There's a sense in which it's done for posterity. It's not only a condemnation of the person that's targeted in the impeachment, it's something that's used to send a signal to, in this case, future presidents about what sort of behavior is considered beyond the pale. And there's always a debate in whenever impeachment of a president becomes a live issue, there's always debate over congressional censure, a sense of the House or a sense of both houses resolution that says, hey, the president did something bad. that's always offered by the particular president's defenders as a way of avoiding the historical penalty of being impeached by the House. It was offered in this case, Congressman McCarthy came out in favor, or at least said he would consider it. There was a censure resolution introduced and circulated yesterday by six Republicans. It's always a cop-out, and it's never offered in entirely good faith that this would be that this will really leave a mark on the president. You can figure that out pretty easily. I think most politically aware Americans can name the three presidents that were impeached by the House: Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and Donald Trump. Now twice. But almost nobody can name more than one president that was reprimanded in this fashion by one House of Congress. Maybe if you're a history buff, you might come up with Andrew Jackson. He got censured by the Senate in 1834 over the bank war. And the reason most people remember it is because he got so mad. He had his allies in the Senate, after an intervening election, expunge it from the Senate record, which ironically made everyone remember it. Nobody can remember a single other president that has been subject to congressional censure. It's a completely worthless remedy. It's like Congress declaring it National Nurses Week. But impeachment by the House, regardless of what happens in the Senate, leaves a mark. It's something that the Republican pundit, Hugh Hewitt, was complaining about the drive to impeachment the other day. And in the process of complaining about it, he's at the same time arguing that, well, this is pointless because the Senate will, we won't have a Senate trial. The Senate will never vote to convict. So it's just a performative gesture. You know, it's like an interpretive dance that Congress is doing or something. And at the same time, he's complaining about the viciousness, the cruelty of forcing Donald Trump to be the only president in history to wear a second scarlet eye. And, you know, inadvertently, that's sort of a tell. This is a big deal. It will be a big deal. It's central to the Johnson and Clinton and now the Trump legacies. And particularly, that's doubly so now that he has made history by being the only president subject to this formal humiliation twice.
Mitch McConnell, it is said, has sort of welcomed this impeachment as if perhaps it would allow the GOP to fully expel Donald Trump from the Republican Party.
Yeah, I saw those reports. McConnell is a pretty interesting character. And I think probably of all the top congressional Republicans, there's certainly much I disagree with and Rue about some of the things he's done as majority leader. But I think of all the top congressional Republicans, he comes out of this having used Trump, really treated him transactionally as Trump treats other people. He never really came off as obsequious towards Trump. Got just about everything he wanted except the continuing Senate majority out of Trump, sort of wrung him dry, and now is going to possibly throw him over. Now, in contrast, you have folks like Ted Cruz. You can call my wife ugly and say that my dad killed JFK, but that's water under the bridge. You have Mike Pence, who, was actually he had his family with him on January 6th when this mob inspired by Donald Trump storms into the Capitol, some of them shouting, "Hang Mike Pence." By Monday, he spends a couple days mad. By Monday, he's back breaking bread with the president. "We have to work together. I'm not even going to file an HR complaint, trigger the 25th Amendment and have you removed." It's really quite remarkable that, and of course, Kevin McCarthy, who we mentioned earlier. It's really quite remarkable, and you wonder, you know, there's the famous or infamous statement that Trump made that he could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose any votes. We've sort of proven that he'd lose. This was about as close as you'd want to come to testing that proposition in real life. And he lost, 10 Republican votes in the House. That's really pretty surprising, and in some ways a bit disturbing.
What about this notion that has been floated out that, and I believe it was Kevin McCarthy who said this, which is basically, please do not disparage your fellow Republicans who vote for the impeachment of the president because you may endanger their lives. And the other comment I heard from reporters quoting members saying that some Republicans are in fact in fear of their lives and the lives of their family members if they vote to impeach the president.
Yeah, you've heard that from some Republican members of the House as well, including the fellow, I forget his name right now, but who is going to be replacing Justin Amash. Do I have that right? Yes. I would have thought that was hysterical hyperbole, a week and a half ago. And now it seems perfectly plausible. And that's just an appalling place to find ourselves.
Gene Healy is author of The Cult of the Presidency and the recent Cato paper, Indispensable Remedy, about Congress's power of impeachment and removal. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.